You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley will be giving us his hopes for accessibility policy for 2026. So what are your hopes for accessibility for 2026?
Well, the big one is that we continue to push hard for change with governments, with the private and the public sector. It's a bigger challenge these days with all the uncertainty in the world. It's a bigger challenge with the distraction issues that are coming up on an almost hourly basis for Canadians. But I still think there's always opportunity to push the agenda.
So when you mentioned distraction issues, are there any steps the public can take to sort of separate rumor from fact and keep their eye on pushing forward for accessibility?
Well, that's the hard part right now in this world of disinformation. It becomes more challenging because what's true and what isn't true. And social media has its strengths. It also has some powerful weaknesses. What is the truth? And we're seeing that every day with the news we're following, not just in Canada, but obviously in the U.S. So that's part of it, is how do we get that message across to people? And we also have so many competing messages anymore. That's a bigger challenge. But how do you get that? And I'm still of the view, until you have both the federal and provincial governments assign a minister to be the minister and to bring forward legislation and to champion, not just in Ontario, but across the country, the agenda, we're being missed. We're missing in action. Meanwhile, there's ministers from this portfolio and this portfolio, and I'd make the case this is a much bigger one that needs the attention it deserves.
So why do you think it is, then, that governments are kind of dragging their heels when it comes to actually appointing a disabilities minister?
I think it's because they can't drag their feet on this one. And you notice, you know, that the pressure isn't on them. There's a million other issues that people are bringing forward, but the pressure isn't on them. And I think part of that is that many people that I work with in the disability community are just trying to do their jobs and trying to survive. And they don't have the time and energy to put the political pressure on to say, come on, Mr. Carney, Mr. Ford, show some real leadership here. And, you know, I go back to the promise made all those years ago by all the three parties in Ontario to make Ontario accessible by now. And we're not even close. So it shows you that they don't feel the pressure. You'll say, well, we're doing this, this, and this, but they're not really doing what the main issue is to make sure it is truly accessible in Ontario, not just physically, but also for employment.
I think one of the big problems there is having an overarching policy, not giving specific direction to this group should be doing that to ensure accessibility, or this group should be doing this in contrast with that. Any thoughts on this subject?
Well, I think governments can lead. I mean, if you put a directive out to all your different departments and ministries and say, listen, this should be a goal of ours, not just, you know, the lip service. And how are we going to do that? How are we going to get there? That takes real leadership. And, you know, we do get distracted all the time by issues that are, to me, just trivia, and our distraction issues and our deliberate distraction issues to keep our mind off some of the biggest serious economic and social issues we're following right now and we're dealing with. And I particularly refer to the U.S. and tariffs. It's had a huge impact here on job creation, and we've had job losses. So I understand why they're focused on that, but there's an opportunity working with the disability community to bring forward other ideas and opportunities for people at the same time.
So, have you seen any progress in the past year that we could potentially build on for the year ahead?
Well, I think just observing across the province, across the country, there's dedicated people like yourself and others who continue to move forward, continue to champion. And those voices will not be silenced. But it's difficult because of the many scattered voices out there on different issues. But I've always said that this is a human rights issue. And that human rights issues, you can only for so long push them away before they go to the courts and you get decisions that force governments to do things. I prefer they want to lead and do it, not be forced by legislation to do it.
In that sense, do you think there are any steps the disability community can take to get organized, to come together as one voice?
Well, I think there's lots. I work with the Ontario Disability Employment Network, and we have a champions group that's been in place now for 15 years. Very vigorous, very non-government, and I think we need those type of voices. I also would suggest there's a municipal election coming up this October in Ontario. That's a good time for people out there in the disability community to say, okay, where are we going in the next 4 years if this council, this mayor is reelected? What will you do? And what will you do that's going to make a substantial difference in our lives? Because most of the things municipalities are doing right now are coming because of legislation. And that, to me, is not always the right way to do things. But sometimes you have no choice. So I think it should be a question every candidate gets in the election. What are you going to do on this issue? What's your background? And do you really understand the issue? And the fact that we have this huge pool of people out there that are educated, informed, who cannot get employment simply because they have a disability. And that is fundamentally wrong in any community.
There's also the inherent problem that for workers with disabilities, it's hard enough to find gainful employment in the first place, but getting back to it would seem to be even more difficult once there's a job loss.
Well, if you look at the big gorilla that's out there right now, and that's AI. And, you know, it's one of those that's a work in progress, but it could create massive opportunities for employment. It also could take away massive opportunities for people who are presently employed and looking for work. And, again, that's going to be a difficult challenge in the years ahead as it moves very, very quickly into our workforces. And I've seen one community I know of, they're looking at making their customer service people just make it AI, and that means job losses. It also means the opportunities will continue to shrink for people with disabilities, and customer service is a good place to be. Our customer service department is fully manned by people and responds to the public every day, and it's a good opportunity to employ people with disabilities if that comes up.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay. That's great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. In this segment of our show, Nicole Frisbee will be telling us a little bit about her hopes for her ministry for the year ahead. So what are your hopes for your disabilities ministry for the year ahead?
I have high hopes for the ministry this year. One of our big hopes is to obtain transportation. Right now, our mentors and families are transporting our individuals, and we would love to receive funding to obtain transportation for them.
So, in that sense, what steps could you take to reach out to the community, to let them know that this is a need?
Well, your show is one of those steps. Thank you very much. Also, we have several fundraisers coming up, and we're joining events, hoping to be part of some of the markets and area functions. We are having a Dash 5K in May. Of course, we have camp, and so we have some great events coming up, and we're looking forward to meeting with people there.
So, for those who might have missed our prior interview, could you take me through a little bit of the work you do?
At MMI, we have four ministries. We serve individuals with disabilities. We focus on empowering. Those ministries include Camp, The Way, which is our day program, Friends Unlimited, which is our Tuesday night worship service, and our residential locations where we offer units for living spaces for our individuals.
So do you find that faith plays a role in the healing of someone with an acquired disability, for an example?
I think faith plays a role in everything that we do in life, especially healing for everyone.
So what are some of the key benefits for someone with a disability being able to come and worship, being a part of a church faith-based community?
Well, I think for us, our Friends Unlimited worship service is something unique for our individuals, and I think it makes a huge impact. One of the things that truly sets us apart is that our programming is designed for our friends and led by our friends. And they choose the songs, they lead the worship on stage, they share the opening announcements, offer prayers, and take their own prayer requests. It creates a meaningful and empowering environment where everyone has a voice and an active role in worship. The things that I have seen there and the magical experience that I see in them is quite amazing. So I think it's very impactful.
Are there ever any challenges in coordinating disability ministries?
Of course. One of those challenges, we spoke last time about the varying cognitive abilities. And at MMI, we believe in embracing individuality and meeting people where they are. We value acceptance and appreciation while remaining passionate about encouraging and supporting each person and reaching their full potential. So the way that we accomplish that is by first striving to connect and understand each individual on a personal level. Everyone processes and receives information differently and communicates differently in varying styles. Taking the time to know someone allows us to reach them the way that is most effective for them. We're fortunate that we have dedicated staff and mentors who work one-on-one with our individuals, providing interactive, personalized support. Our lessons are faith-based, and they're very engaging, designed to make the message more meaningful and memorable. For example, participants may take part in theatrical experiences, becoming disciples in the boat during the storm, or shepherds and wise men celebrating the birth of Jesus. This immersive activity helps bring the lessons to life in a way that resonates deeply.
So that being said, do you find that using techniques like that in more of a cool, relatable way is something that parishioners respond positively to, that they're more likely to remember the message if it's something that they were a part of?
Absolutely.
So, is there any recent success story or moment you'd like to share?
Yes. Thank you for asking about that, actually. My testimony comes from the profound impact this community has had on me personally. When I first came to MMI, my goal was simply to work in ministry. I wasn't focused on a specific area. While I had respect and compassion for individuals with disabilities, that wasn't my original passion. But once I experienced this incredible community, I absolutely fell in love with them, and it has completely changed my perspective and ignited a fire within me. As far as our individuals, I have seen so many success stories, and above the fact that they're all a miracle in themselves, seeing someone come in who is less social, with more withdrawn, and to be able to see them thrive and be excited and to gain confidence in even communicating with new people, it's all so amazing.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for equality of inclusion and faith, what would you say?
I would say, based on my experience, I now understand something deeply. It's not our individuals who need to learn and adapt to society. It's society who needs to learn and understand and embrace them. They live and love life in a way that we should all aspire to. This realization has transformed not only my work, but my heart. I've often heard it said that individuals with disabilities are among the least appreciated and accepted groups, and that many hesitate to engage with them simply because they don't know how to respond. My heartfelt response to that is that I would choose to be accepted by this community over any other. They are some of the most loving, welcoming, supportive, and accepting people in the world. Their joy and love for life is extraordinary and something truly rare and beautiful. Some of the challenges we are currently working to overcome include a shortage of mentors who can love and support our friends. And once someone gets involved with this community, it will change you. So I encourage everyone to just embrace people and just be open and loving.
So you were telling me that you gave sort of a unique perspective during lessons to folks with disabilities. Can you share that story with us?
Love to. Thank you. So one of my lessons, I had a bag of common rocks, and I held out the rocks to them, and they each got to pick a stone, and I told them that people are like these rocks. There are lots of common people in the world, and that's okay, but you can find rocks anywhere. But I showed them a gem, and it was a beautiful amethyst, and I said, you are the amethyst. You are unique. Would you rather be one of these rocks just like everyone else? Or would you like to be beautiful and special like this one? And it gave them something to think about.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Disability Studies Students Association is a small and tight-knit community of people who are passionate about and committed to representing and supporting disability studies students at the University of Windsor. The DSSA holds events on campus and in the community, like the annual Down Syndrome Day Walk, to raise funds for supporting organizations. If you would like to get involved or learn more, you can contact the Disability Studies Student Association directly at dssa@uwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley about his hopes for disability policy in the year ahead. And, similarly, we heard from Nicole Frisby about her hopes for her disabilities ministry for the year ahead. In this segment of our show, Sean Wiltshire will be giving us an update on his disability employment work. So, in terms of disability employment, what would the ideal be for the year 2026?
I think the ideal would be a continuation of what we have worked on for 30 years, which is gaining understanding to the needs of the employer, matching them with skilled candidates who just might happen to have a disability. Folks have said and asked me questions about where is DEI headed in 2026. And my commentary often back is I said it's not so much about DEI, it's that we have to continue to focus on Canadian companies and Canadian solutions. And usually those solutions usually include a broader range of options, which would be more inclusive workplaces. It's not looked upon as such a sectional piece of the economy that it only affects, a particular population. We've learned, particularly over the last, new developments that are coming, that universal design isn't only for folks with disabilities, it's for our population in general. And anything that makes every place more accessible to all the people in the population gains, credibility because it's accessible. It's not just for one group. So as we move into 2026, I think my word of the year would be access. Access to jobs, access to opportunity. Nobody has ever suggested that folks with disabilities are looking for a handout. We've always sort of depended on our community to say to folks, we're looking for a hand up. It's an equality level in the playing field, I can still do the work. I may do it a little differently. I may get to work a little differently. So I think, Cam, this year my word will be access, access to opportunity. And that, of course, helps people not only become citizens, but what our government is looking for are more taxpayers. And helping people break into the economy and become taxpayers is what we should be focusing on versus what we perceive people's limitations to be.
It's interesting you brought up the point about universal design. With disability laws and mandates becoming more and more common, those protections, for companies, they should be recognizing it's easier to have things in place rather than having to reinvent the wheel when the time comes and the wind shifts for people with disabilities.
And I think that it's one of those things, Cam, that I continue to sort of say, it's until a critical mass is reached in any human rights or human development process, it continues until enough folks are affected where people are going to stand up and say, not my brother, not my sister, not my aunt, not my uncle, not my cousin. And that's when things start to change. That's when society starts to recognize that it shouldn't have to matter to you personally for it to matter. When I often talk to folks about why inclusion is important, I move away from the social positives that it gives us a better society. And I try to explain to people it's the economics of the equation. If you don't have folks working, who's going to serve you at restaurants? Who's going to be your doctor? Who's going to be service industry folks? Who's going to be your maintenance worker, your folks that work in your municipality? If we worry about how to build a more inclusive society, those challenges will be answered. But if our continued solution is to do what we've done in the past, then we're in danger. Danger of not having good services, and we already see the labor market is challenged in certain areas. While there are hundreds of thousands of folks who are capable of working, but we just need to make sure that, here we go again, that word access, accessibility. It's not only just about a blue parking spot. It's not about a ramp. It's about getting access to quality employees. And that's what businesses want at the end of the day, is a good employee. And we know lots of those folks.
So do you think any of the responsibility for those who could potentially work, do you think any of the blame is to go to the education sector in terms of the training and the lack of accommodations?
Absolutely. I think that this is one of those solutions where you have to go back to the source of the issue. If we empowered our kids and young folks with disabilities to dream big and the idea that they are capable, we don't know what people's limitations are, and the educational system is often designed for C average, right? It's the middle of the road. Exceptional kids who are really bright don't get challenged. Kids that have exceptionalities and are challenged by a regular program don't always receive the supports that would allow them to excel. Once we start to recognize this idea that neurodiversity or folks that are processing information differently is not the exception, it's more the norm. And we've been teaching folks that we only do things one way. And, you know, you only have to look at educational systems around the world that have the opportunity for young folks to look at trades earlier. Their ability to be able to access those educational programs and move away from a university-designed, you know, program, which many people are driven to out of high school. Trades and community college are great options for folks. And we often think that this is not the direction we should go in because university has been sold. Well, you know, from my own personal experience, my own son is a plumber and a Red Seal plumber, and it took him, you know, as long as it did for a university degree. It didn't cost as much, but there were other expenses, but he now earns on average more than somebody graduating with an undergraduate degree. So it's when people look at the value of your education and where you're going to spend your dollars and those opportunities, educational systems have to adapt to the changing society that we live in. We we are often fad-driven, Cam, and it often worries me, whether it's AI or dot-com bubble. It's one of those questions that we have to answer of where is the value in the piece of the process that we're involved in. So if it's for AI, it's to help us cut our workload. But if you're not using it correctly, it comes out wrong. So we've got a lot of education to do with folks about where their place is and what they can do to not only, I don't want to use the word demand, but to give them the power to understand that they are capable and we support them and that they have to sometimes ask for what they need because people don't always know what you may need to reach your potential. So it's I'm back to that word again. It's access to opportunity, access to challenges, to see themselves like everybody else, that I can do what others can.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Friends, I really love Nicole's example about common stones versus gemstones, but the truth of the matter is, a disability can be acquired at any time, and honestly, like a great diamond, disability can be forged by pressure and time, creating something beautiful out of something that seems so commonplace. A person might only find their full potential by exploring another path, by being able to see that life is so much more diverse than just Group A and Group B. Why settle for seeing just two layers of life, us and them? Life is so much more beautiful, so much more diverse, so much more layered than most people would give it credit for. You can be born into the world, quote-unquote, normal. Go on about your life, do what you're doing, then one day, a disability sets in. And that can be a hard circumstance. In a lot of cases, with acquired disabilities, it takes finding a focal point, something to keep you running till you can see the light again. But you might find, once you've adapted to your new circumstances, that you have become something so much stronger, so much more beautiful, even so much more valuable in some ways than you ever thought possible. Think of it as starting as the coal and becoming a beautiful diamond through hardship, through circumstance, but most of all, through keeping an open heart and mind. If you realize you're not facing it alone, if you realize there are those to stand with you, you can be shaped, you can be forged in ways you never thought possible. Disability in sport is a great example of this. So many people with acquired disabilities want to keep an active lifestyle. That's important. I'd recommend that for anybody. But finding new and innovative ways to participate in their game, that's not only encouraging great athletic performance, giving them something to focus on, but it makes things better for all of us. You can't say something's impossible if somebody's gone out and done it. Let's be honest, though. Transformation into a functional member of disability society doesn't happen overnight. It comes in finding little moments and little places of strength. But if you find those, if you find you can succeed in one aspect of your life, that's a strength you can carry into other areas. You can do what no one thought was possible, including yourself. It takes not only a willingness to be shaped and to grow into a new role, it takes the right support system, the right people telling you you can succeed, encouraging you to try. Many times in society, we like to put labels and expectations on people. Just because I didn't succeed at this or that, we like to say you won't either. And for a person with a disability, to tell them that, that is the worst thing you can do. Allowing them to explore their own potential, to try before it's branded impossible, that's key. One person might learn from another's attempt, and might even come up with an innovative solution. It's all about community, my friends. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media.